Welcome back to the forecast, Walter.
Thank you.
We can start by having you, bring us up to date on what many believe is a ban on fracking in New York State.
Well, first and foremost, there's no ban.
No ban.
Anyone that tells you that there has been a comprehensive ban on shale fracking in New York is not telling the truth. There is a limited prohibition on high-volume hydraulic fracturing. However, that is untested, so we don't know even how strong that is. And the big flaw in this prohibition is it's limited to 300,000 or more gallons of water. So, for example, in Barton, New York, not that far from Ithaca, they've actually proposed to frack Marcellus Shale and Utica Shale with so-called gelled propane or liquefied petroleum gas, LPG. You can also frack with nitrogen foam, carbon dioxide. So Governor Cuomo, as far as I'm concerned, has not kept his promise to prohibit all forms of high-volume hydraulic fracking. Fortunately, on the good side, we've been really bringing the pressure to bear on the governor since last July, when just literally maybe a week after the prohibition was adopted, we found out about this brutal loophole. So there's been no final decision, but people can go to toxicstargeting.com, click on Marcellus Shale. They can read these coalition letters. They can see all about the press coverage. So we've got to make sure that those permits are rejected. Otherwise, it would be the beginning of the end of even our limited prohibition. And this is the first time anywhere in the country that high-volume hydraulic fracturing has been prohibited in any fashion where people want to do it. So this is a landmark victory. It's very important. We just got to defend it, and we have to extend it.
Walter, to your knowledge, is Barton the first test of this in New York?
Yes. So this is a technology, you know, where you can frack with a gas that's been compressed until it's a liquid. And this is typically developed for very arid areas where they don't have water. Mm-hmm. So this is clearly an attempt to work around the hydrofracking prohibition. Mm-hmm. And the definition of what constitutes high-volume hydraulic fracturing is so complicated. It's so unclear. No one really knows what it means. And so that's how come we've been requesting the governor to issue a supplemental finding statement to make the prohibition absolutely comprehensive and bulletproof. But so far, we have not received a favorable reply, and that's how come it's very important for citizens who care about this issue to continue to take action to make sure that the governor does not allow this to proceed.
Well, besides Barton, then, are there more applications for fracking operations in New York State?
That's a really good question. I've been meaning to submit a Freedom of Information request to find out if there are any additional applications. For example, these two applications were actually submitted before the final supplemental generic environmental impact statement was adopted. So the State Department of Environmental Conservation was fully aware about these applications, and when they adopted the finding statement, they deliberately provided a cutout for this so-called gelled propane fracking. So you just have to trust but verify. And I'm going to try to make sure that we, you know about any other applications that are out there. Sooner or later, the industry is going to want to come to New York for two reasons. One is because eventually the prices of gas will recover. There's such an incredible glut of natural gas in the market now that the prices are shockingly low. And that's because the amount of natural gas being produced in America has grown by about 50% just in maybe the last 6 or 7 years, thanks to shale fracking. But the other reason why they will ultimately want to frack in New York is because they need to build out the infrastructure. For example, the Millennium Pipeline goes right through Binghamton, New York. If you come out of the hockey shop and look up the hill, you'll see this huge swath of cleared land. That's the Millennium Pipeline. But that's about 30 miles north of Pennsylvania, where fracking has been going on to the tune of thousands and thousands of wells. So the problem is that the frackers in Pennsylvania can't get their gas to market sufficiently because they can't connect to the Millennium Pipeline. There's insufficient transport capacity.
Where does the Millennium Pipeline go?
Basically starts west of Corning, and it goes down towards the New York metropolitan area where it connects up with other gas transmission infrastructure. So these pipelines are very, very important because the supply of all this gas that is being produced right now is extremely constrained in our area. But if they continue to frack and they continue to build out the infrastructure, that gas is all going to go to market. And that's the biggest fight that we're looking at in the short term.
Yeah, okay. So you've talked about staying alert and aware of all of this. And what can people do to stop it if they're so inclined?
Well, the most important thing is to understand that contrary to what people have asserted, it's not really based on good science. It's not really even based on, you know, financial considerations. It's based on political considerations. So the way that we beat shale fracking in New York head-to-head against the industry, against Andrew Cuomo, was because we brought sufficient political pressure to bear where he couldn't go forward. And we did that because of the strategy of preventing this inadequate final ESGEIS to be adopted. And then ultimately, we required the governor to conduct a Department of Health comprehensive public health impact study for shale fracking. And when that study was announced, it would have been done in secret, that's when the prohibition was adopted. But the most important thing we did was we supported Zephyr Teachout, and she took 1 million votes from a sitting governor who aspired to be president. And that really rang the bell. And that is almost certainly why he adopted the prohibition. So people have to understand, this is a participatory sport. You got to get in there. You got to fight it out. If you're just going to sit around and think you can forward a few emails or listen to some blog or just kind of assume that someone else is going to take care of the problem, that's a cardinal sin. It is a democracy. It's government by the people. So learn about the issues, learn how you can get involved, and learn how you can be effective. And in order to be effective, you have to be coachable. And that's how come we were ultimately so successful, because we had so many people who were persuaded that shale fracking was not a good idea for New York. And then we unified those efforts, not all of them. It's like, you know, herding proverbial cats, but ultimately we were able to bring sufficient, sustained, brutal pressure to bear on the governor, and we beat him head to head.
So there's been some mention, you know, at the top of the hour, we heard a little bit of news, and there's a climate rally next week in Albany. Tell us, is that the kind of action you're talking about?
There are going to be a lot of people showing up at State of the State. Beginning probably 5 years ago, I'm the one that initially asked people to show up at State of the State. It's the governor's big day. And so all the bigwigs troop down the concourse from the Capitol, from the legislative office building, and then they enter what's called the convention center. So in the beginning, we probably only had 75 or 100 people. But by the end of our fight, we had 2,000 people screaming, waving signs, just ruining the governor's day because we dominated the press coverage. So I'm issuing a call. Show up at State of the State Wednesday the 13th. The governor's going to be speaking at 12:30. We've got to get to the concourse, stake out that prime turf, bring every prop you got, bring every sign you got, and be ready to scream your heads off for whatever it is you want. And the thing that I think we have to focus on first and foremost is making sure that the governor doesn't issue what are called Section 401 water quality certifications that are absolutely required to build several huge gas pipelines, notably the Newmarket pipeline expansion project, which goes right through Tompkins County. It actually comes right into Ithaca, goes through Ellis Hollow. There's a huge compressor station out there. This would convey gas from Pennsylvania essentially towards Schenectady. Then there's the Constitution Pipeline. This is arguably our top priority because it's the most likely to either get denied or to get authorized for this water quality certification. And then the final one is what's called the Northeast Energy Direct, NED. So if we can basically stop these pipelines from being constructed, it would have an absolutely cataclysmic effect on fossil fuel consumption and on the politics of shale gas. And that's really what I think our most important fight is all about in the short term.
Let me just say real quick for folks wanting to go to Albany, there are some buses going. There's a group, Fossil Free Tompkins, is organizing buses, so you don't have to drive your own car out there. Go to fossilfreetompkins.org to learn about those.
Okay, and Guillermo, I'd like to remind our listeners that they are listening to The Forecast, our twice weekly show on climate change here on WRFI Community Radio for the Finger Lakes. And we're speaking today with Walter Hang, president of Toxics Targeting and longtime environmental activist, who is giving us a lecture on how we all can participate in that activism. Walter, I'd like to continue the topic of fossil fuel infrastructure. We've talked a bit about pipelines now. Talk to us about the coal-fired plant that supplies Ithaca's electricity just up the lake. What's going on there, and what's the current status?
So what's going on in New York as a whole is that there's so much available natural gas, thanks to shale fracking, all across the country, that the gas is dirt cheap. And so it is literally cannibalizing power plants all over the state. So, for example, the coal-fired plant in Lansing can't compete against the cheap natural gas. So it's only being kept online, you know, while they either try to convert it to natural gas or try to come up with an alternative. There's a power plant in Oswego, New York, nuclear power plant. It lost $60 million last year. That's in danger of also being taken offline. Oil-fired power plants all over simply can't compete. So the reason that I got involved with this infrastructure campaign is because I think we need a new strategy. Mm-hmm. And the strategy is simply that we have got to stop using fossil fuel. And I don't think that we need to necessarily do that by supplanting coal, oil, and gas consumption with sustainable alternatives such as wind, solar, geothermal, you name it. If that can be accomplished, that's great. The problem is that America is now the world's largest oil and gas producer. Oil production has gone up about 100%. Literally in the last 7 years due to shale fracking. So the problem is that environmentalists and sustainable energy activists for 25 years have basically said, okay, we're going to have coal and oil and gas. We're going to try to stop using that by developing alternatives. And I think what we need to do is to simply stop using gas, oil, coal. And the first thing that we can do, for example, is make sure that this Lansing power plant doesn't get converted to natural gas. It can't compete. It's polluting. Just stop that facility from operating. And what people don't realize is that there's actually a dedicated fund that can help municipalities essentially, you know, transform themselves from being reliant on the taxes generated by these giant power plants to whatever their transition future is going to be. Mm-hmm. And Barbara Lifton, our local assembly rep, was very involved in making sure that those funds were available. So we got to make sure that you don't put a ton of money into converting these power plants to burn natural gas, because then they operate for the next 50 years to amortize their debt. So the theory is very similar to pipelines. If fossil fuels are so bad, we got to break our addiction to them immediately. And that's how come all across the country, they are fracking like mad. They are building pipelines like mad. They are converting oil and coal fired power plants like mad. But here in New York, we can completely implement a new agenda. Because number one, unlike the entire rest of the country, we are within spitting distance of ending all oil and gas production. After 200 years of polluting activity, we are so close to killing off all oil and gas extraction activities, it's just shocking. Statewide, all of the oil that's being produced on a day-to-day basis wouldn't even fill a single backyard swimming pool. That's how teeny it is. And there's a Wall Street Journal article about how all these ancient little stripper wells are just not economical. So you're looking at thousands of these ancient wells that are just operating slowly but surely, but we have a chance to eliminate all of them. Same thing with natural gas. I drove through Ovid, New York, and towards South Geneva yesterday. When I started this work 6 years ago, there were wells in that area like a checkerboard. And now there are much fewer wells. They're playing out. So we're killing off this polluting production. These are pollution problems that we've had to live with in New York for 200 years. We're the only state that is perhaps able to get rid of this polluting industry. And so I believe our next challenge, get rid of production, then get rid of consumption. No conversions of power plants, no new pipelines. People simply have to stop burning natural gas, oil. And we're in a wonderful position to do that because people have forgotten you can save money mm-hmm. by not burning natural gas and oil to heat your house. And so I always love telling this little story. I bought this little arts and crafts bungalow. I could tell it wasn't insulated at all. I stood on the second floor. I could feel the heat coming in through the roof. I go up in my attic. There's like 2 inches of vermiculite. So I go to Home Depot. I bought $130 worth of cellulose insulation. It's chopped up newspapers and magazines with boric acid. I just busted it up. I insulated my house. Then I bought a programmable thermostat. I sealed off the drafts. And in one winter, I made back roughly the $250 that I invested. And that is what people have to do. They can't rely on groups to do it. They can't rely on the president to do it. The president is totally pro-fracking. He has been in office while shale fracking has made America the largest oil and gas producer on the planet. When he says that America is a leader in climate change, that's just an unbelievable farce. So we can't rely on international treaties. I believe here in Ithaca, people can kill these pipelines, kill these conversions, and stop using so much fossil fuel on their own. That's the challenge at hand.
Yeah, and the way that you just described it, taking charge of your energy waste first, that's really the most powerful, I think. And so
it's taking responsibility.
Yeah. And you, like you said, the paybacks for most people are pretty straightforward and pretty easy on a time scale that's understandable for most people. Loans available, there's lots of programs. I'll speak for Cooperative Extension as a resource if people want. Call us down there, and we've got all kinds of programs for you to tap into. But so you mentioned the Cayuga power plant. There's another. So there's a peaker plant that wanted to go back online on the west side of Seneca Lake for the Watkins Glen listeners. These are things that are offline now. So it's not like we need that power at the moment either. So when folks talk about, you know, converting, it's not a power plant that's been active really for the last few years already, as far as Cayuga is concerned.
See, this is the amazing scenario. So number one, New York has never generated its own natural gas. It's always only produced about 5% of the natural gas it consumes, right? So the trick is, you're exactly right. We already have all the power we need for now. And if we continue to reduce consumption, we're ultimately going to dramatically minimize energy demand. So when Dick Cheney said that conservation is a virtue, but it's not an energy policy, he couldn't have been more wrong. Would someone say, we're going to open our windows in the wintertime in our house and let out all that warm air? Of course, no one would say that, right? Well, that's what's happening to almost all the houses in Ithaca. The air that we heat is going right through the roof because there's no insulation. It's going out through cracks. And so I think even though there are these existing programs, they're simply not enough. I believe that we've got to get the cost of insulating a home down to like $100 or $200. And I think that if that was the cost with tax benefits and with just basically helping people to do it, I think almost anyone would say, I can afford that. Like right now, it's about $1,000 or more for a middle-class family. Maybe they'll get $100 off. If you are lower income families, you're maybe going to get 50% off, but still you got to pony up $500, you know, $750. That doesn't sound like much, but for a lot of families, they just don't have it.
Sure. It's actually, we've done studies. I mean, we've looked at studies that other folks have done. The average weatherization job costs, average New York State, costs about $8,000. The latest NYSERDA numbers look closer to about $10,000 or $12,000 for the average weatherization job across the state.
But that's the full home, Guillermo, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
See,
but these are things that even at that cost, even then, the payback is such that if you're able to get a low-interest loan, which most people, you know, there are some issues there that have to be addressed. But even for those folks who you know, most people can get some sort of a loan for it, you're monthly payments are less than your savings typically or in line with. So folks might be paying a little bit and you know, living in a more comfortable space and using enormous amount of less energy.
Let me just make one point about that. I'm thinking that that probably includes replacing the windows.
No, no. And that's the beauty. I mean, these programs try to not replace windows.
What about furnaces? I mean, where's the $8,000 go? If I did it for $230, where's the rest of the $7,000 going?
It's weatherization, so your walls. I mean, it takes a lot more work to insulate a wall than it does.
Then don't do the walls.
You must.
Right?
You must.
Do the ceiling.
Well, there's things, right. So there's lower hanging fruit that you should do first. But that you're not going to get there unless you do the rim joists, the walls, the sagging insulation, the rat's nest that was, you know, the mouse nest. So these, you know, moisture issues, if all that is addressed, then you really achieve huge savings.
Yeah, I think the resolution here is that there's a spectrum of costs, you know, depending on whether the homeowner does much of the work himself or herself, versus you have professionals do it who look at every nook and cranny and so on, which I think you're the far end, Guillermo, you know, the higher figures are what you're talking about there.
Yeah, where the real savings are going to be found, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean, but again, there's multiple approaches to this.
Sure. And
all involve doing something.
Right. There are small things, low-cost and no-cost things that everyone can do.
Okay, so yeah. I'm going to tell listeners again that they are listening to The Forecast, our twice-weekly show here about climate change here on WRFI. Community Radio for the Finger Lakes. We're talking today with the distinguished Walter Hang, president of Toxics Targeting, a local environmental company and environmental activist who is going to speak to us yet more about environmental activism, what people can and should be doing. Welcome back to The Forecast. I'm Art Weaver with Guillermo Metz. Our guest today is Walter Hang, president of Toxics Targeting and environmental activist. Walter, I'm going to change the line of questioning here a bit away from fossil fuel infrastructure and activism and get into a more personal question, if you'll allow. In a recent podcast interview with Jeff Stein of the Ithaca Voice, your response to one of his questions interested me very much. Jeff wrote this. He said, Hang's initial goal had nothing to do with cleaning up toxic sites. At least it didn't seem to. He had originally intended to study cancer and search for ways to combat the pervasive disease. Unfortunately, all of Hang's patients, young children, died while undergoing chemotherapy. Quote, it was a shocking revelation. I realized I had made a tragic error. I wasn't going to cure anyone of anything. I could work my whole life and not basically achieve that goal, close quote. Jeff writes, that was a turning point for you, Walter, in more ways than one. The same day he had that realization, he stumbled upon an article that linked higher cancer mortality rates to environmentally contaminated areas. And you concluded, quote, it's got to be something in the environment. And if we can prevent our exposure to the causes of cancer, we won't have to treat it or cure it. So here's my questions. I think in one way or another, all of our listeners know that fossil fuel toxicities are killing them, either directly, say, from mercury fallout from a coal-fired power plant, or very indirectly and slowly via climate change and all the ramifications of that. How does one cross the line from being aware of all that to activism? And why should you cross the line?
So the whole matter is, if you don't do the work yourself, it ain't going to get done. If you think that there's going to be some, you know, hero that's going to come save you, if you think some group's going to do the work because you write them a check, the reality is that just ain't happening. So I will never forget that day at Roswell Park where I said to my boss, Bob Hughes, you know, what does our work really have to do with curing cancer? I mean, I'm killing all my patients with chemotherapy. I mean, I was 21 years old. I thought I was going to cure cancer in one summer. I had no idea. And so Bob, and I can't imitate his accent, he was from MD Anderson Hospital in Houston, Texas, and he said, about as much as the Indianapolis 500. And I got so depressed, I went to hide in the library. It was seminar day. And that's when I saw that famous article by Robert Hoover Jr. from the National Cancer Institute, and it has the Cancer Atlas. And it showed cancer mortality rates county by county for the whole country. And if you look at the map of New York, Niagara Falls, Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, you know, all these places had cancer mortality rates in the top 10% of the nation's overall rate. If you look at the Adirondack Mountains, very low cancer mortality rates. Where I'm from, Dutchess County, home of all the robber barons, very low cancer mortality rates. And that's when I had that revelatory moment. It's got to be something in the environment. If we prevent our exposure to the causes of the disease, then we won't get cancer as much. We won't have to treat it or cure it. But what I didn't understand was the politics. So the first day that I went to the state capitol with my colleague, Joe Salvo, an RPI-trained scientist, we had all this great gas chromatography, mass spectrometry data. We showed it to this guy, Ron Peterson, from the state senate. He was this chief staff person for the Environmental Conservation Committee. And after our presentation, it was very powerful data. He looked at it and he said, well, frankly, we don't like any of those ideas. And he kicked us out. And we are standing on the third floor of the Capitol. I looked at Joe and I said, I think this means all our bills are dead. And that was the second day of session. So what people have to understand is it's really hard to clean up toxic sites. We've driven about $70 million worth of cleanup of toxic problems here in Little Ithaca. I've been working for 15 years to clean up stupid Ithaca Gun. And it's just so hard. Mayor Savante Merrick has just screwed up this remedial effort. He recontaminated the area that the Environmental Protection Agency remediated at enormous cost. He wouldn't listen. He used heavy equipment. All the pollution rained down in the area. And to make matters incredibly worse, they didn't want to put up a big fence to keep people out of the recontaminated area. So you look at the fence, it's like a fence that you might see at a country club. And the warning sign is black. You can hardly see it. So if you want to clean up these problems, if you want to protect your health, if you want to stop the use of fossil fuels, number one, you've got to make your own personal decision that I'm going to solve this problem myself. You can support all the groups you want. You can give money anytime you want. You know, but the main thing is start solving the problem. So if you don't have $8,000 to totally insulate your house, go to Home Depot and spend $150, $250, and begin. But realize that these matters are political fights. And so the big green groups in Albany and across the nation, number one, they're not particularly effective. I mean, look at what they've achieved in 25 years. Here in New York, the alternative sustainable energy that we're consuming is roughly 4.3%, according to New York State Energy Research Development Authority, if you take out hydro.
That's right.
And so that is the challenge at hand. Stop talking about all these great things. Start doing. And the way to do it is clean, you know, insulate your own home, work with other people to insulate as many homes as we can here in Ithaca at the lowest possible cost. Maybe it won't be perfect, but we've got to drive down consumption of fossil fuels starting right now without delay. And then if we kill off these giant infrastructure projects, that's going to send a message to Andrew Cuomo like he got hit with a cattle prod. And so for the first time, you're going to have a sitting governor who won't be able to just pontificate about how he supports the Paris Accord and how he can envision this incredible future with 100% sustainable alternatives by 2030. And you say, where's the money to do that? How is that actually going to happen if you keep approving pipelines, if you keep approving energy, you know, power plant conversions? Yep. And so people have to try to speak with one voice. And I think the voice is no more infrastructure. Stop using fossil fuels any way you can. And our future has to be on reduced energy demand. And if we can do that, because of the sophisticated research that we're all doing, because of the amazing advocacy and organizing that we're doing, I think we're going to kill perhaps some of these giant infrastructure projects, and that will, again, set a precedent for the rest of the country.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. And that sends a clear message. If we're able to reduce our energy use, rather than saying to the governor and others locally, we need more energy, we need more gas, we need this and that, it sends a clear message that, look, actually, we can reduce our energy usage, and we don't need more. You talk about the pipeline in Dryden. There's been a lot of conversation and analysis of how to supply gas or whatever's needed to growing companies that may or may not need it. And there are other ways to deliver energy to those companies. But even if they do need natural gas, if others were able to reduce their usage just a little bit, it would release enough from the existing pipeline to allow those companies to go ahead and grow. So it's a restructuring of energy rather than we all need more of it and we need more gas.
See, the key thing is a little bit. We're not saying that we're going to have a completely different, you know, future immediately. Mm-hmm. We're basically saying we've got to change the inflection point. Instead of going up, 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 we got to start going down, 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 down. This saves consumers money.
And quickly.
And so start. And that's how come I run a business. And so when someone comes to me, like one of my colleagues, and they say, we need this new workstation. We need this new software. We need all these things. And I say, you know, that's going to cost a lot. And so I say, well, how much can we do, you know, for like a third of that or a tenth of that? And so I think that that's the key thing. You drive around in Ithaca normally in the wintertime when there's snow on the roofs, and you'll see the roofs are bare. The heat has melted all the snow. The water has run down to the eaves, and you got giant icicles, giant ice dams. The bottom line is, last year, I understand, in all of Tompkins County, only 220 homes and structures were insulated in any fashion out of 20,000. That's 0.1%. You can't tell me that we can't do enormously better. And that's what I think we have to do, is stop expanding the use of fossil fuel. Kill these pipelines. Because we know that the Department of Environmental Conservation can't meet the requirement of the Clean Water Act. And the Clean Water Act says you can't give these water quality certifications unless you determine that these projects, either through the construction or the operation, will not cause water quality violations. And so what I did was I looked at the Department of Environment, the Conservation's own data, and I basically documented huge fires and explosions and basically pollution problems that had never been cleaned up. And so I basically think that the governor is now facing for the first time this kind of very, very well-reasoned argument. For example, here's one. Gas pipeline explosion, Parker Schoolhouse Road, Harpersville, New York, or Harpers Field, New York, 1/25/2004, quote, some form of failure in the pipeline that caused the release of propane. The propane did ignite, close quote. Quote, cause to be determined, but seems to be equipment failure at shutoff valve. Estimate, 350,000 gallons of gas released. Burn time, around 18 hours. One home leveled 100 yards away, close quote. So that's how come I think if we can kill the Constitution pipeline, we can set a precedent, and then we need to expand these insulation retrofitting programs. No one wants these businesses to falter. No one wants a business that isn't growing and prospering. I don't think that anyone is saying we got to go back to hunting and gathering and we have to live in ice boxes. But there has to be a middle ground that we can start working to achieve right now. And that's the key thing. Don't worry about supplanting all these existing energy sources, you know, with all these alternatives that are too expensive or too hard to put in place. Let's just start and do what we can and cut the fossil fuel consumption, reduce the energy demand. And if we can do it in Tompkins County, if we can do it in New York State, it's going to completely change the national discussion on this matter.
That's right. I was giving a presentation to a group up at Kendall yesterday on renewable energy, just sort of a sustainability group there. And somebody asked me, so what? You know, I cut back, I reduce my energy use, and then I supplant the rest with renewables. And okay, so we do that in Tompkins. How is that helping climate change? You know, obviously the answer is we all have to. You know?
Well, it is it's reducing the impact on climate change.
Right.
Every single house that you retrofit, like every single little kilowatt that you don't use that's generated by fossil fuel, that's less impact on the environment and on the planet. The key thing is, if one person does it, it's a little bit better, but it's not a whole lot better. But if you get, for example, tens of thousands of people, if you get, for example, Cornell University, right? You go to Cornell, and very commonly in the wintertime, the offices are boiling hot. The windows are wide open. And so that's just not sensible. And so I think...
Yeah, but they don't have any money to do those things, do they, Walter?
See, it's all about the politics, right? They love talking about how their coal-fired power plant was converted to natural gas as a huge trunk line from the Dominion pipeline. And so Tom Wilbur in the Press and Sun Bulletin, the Ithaca Journal, wrote very eloquently about how just in like 6 years, the view of natural gas as a bridge fuel, right, has completely changed. No one ever said, what do we need a bridge fuel for? We already got all the energy we need. We just got to use less of it. So Cornell is incredibly susceptible to political pressure because this town is full of their graduates. We have all these professors among us. And I think, again, the whole thing is to get everyone speaking with one voice, not to talk about these very complicated issues, but rather to say, what are we going to do right now that can help reduce the consumption of fossil fuels?
Well, it does make us think some also, because that simple conversion, you know, more energy, how to get it, like you said, fossil fuels from coal to natural gas, that was a transition people understood. Engineers have been in the business for 40 years. They said, oh, we could do that. But some of these other things that are, you know, transitions that are truly transitions, that are cutting back on energy use, those are, to some folks, a new mindset. And so we really have to start thinking about our energy use more, I think.
See, if I may, it has to be perhaps coterminous, right? Like, if people want to do solar, that's great. They want to do wind, that's great. I'm just telling you, that's hard. That is what recent decades have told us. I love it when people want these comprehensive solutions. But in the beginning, we need baby steps. We need to get rolling, and then we have to start cutting fossil fuel, reducing energy demand. And then down the line, you can have as many grandiose schemes as you want. If you can achieve 100% renewables in by 2030, that's great. But I don't see it. And the reality is we're basically at 4.3% if you take out hydro. So I think the deal is, what are we going to do now? And the first thing we can do, prevent these power plant conversions, because that would lock us into 50 years of more fossil fuel burning. Kill these pipelines. First and foremost, go to toxicstargeting.com. Click on Marcellus Shale special section in the lower right-hand corner. Sign these coalition letters and start basically calling the governor, basically tell the governor at 518-474-8390, no Section 401 water quality certifications for any pending pipeline project applications. The last thing that we need in New York is more fossil fuel supply and consumption. And if everyone starts doing that, particularly by going to the state and screaming their heads off, it's going to have a political impact. I know it will, because the governor knows that we beat him like a gong on shale fracking, and as long as he doesn't get political cover, we're going to be able to replicate our good work and achieve more victories in the years to come.
Okay, we're getting toward the end of the hour, and I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to The Forecast, twice weekly show on climate change here on WRFI. We're here today with Walter Hang, president of Toxics Targeting and local environmental activist. Okay, so Walter, I'm going to turn the conversation again a little bit. Many, many people here in our progressive, so-called city of Ithaca and environs are members of big green groups. For example, the Sierra Club or Greenpeace, or you know, pick your group. Why isn't that effective? Why isn't that solution? And why does all change come from grassroots organizations, one person at a time?
So the most important thing is, it is sad to say, but when you look at these environmental groups, you have no idea how expensive they are to run. So I married a fundraiser for Natural Resources Defense Council. I think last time I checked, they were like $107 million a year operation. They have amazing cherry furniture in their splendid corporate headquarters. If you look at Environmental Defense Fund, my former intern colleague Fred Krupp got one person to give him $100 million in one pop. He was looking at a budget annually, $117 million a year. So they can't raise that much money if they keep making people angry and getting into pollution cleanup fights. They realized this probably 30 years ago. And so they started allowing these big corporate polluters on their boards. And then instead of fighting it out at the grassroots level, which is where all these groups started, right? They were radical at the time. They said, we're going to go to the policy level. And that way, people didn't know whether or not they had won or lost. They would just talk about, we're going to have 100% sustainables. They love talking about impossible to achieve goals that sound great. Like, we need federal regulation of oil and gas extraction. Well, that isn't happening anytime soon. Almost all the permits for gas and oil extraction in America are granted by the states. And so they've created this fundraising propaganda machine. And citizens who are so good and so wanting to help the planet.
And so gullible.
And well, you know, they get those magazines, they get all those appeals, donate, donate, donate. And so that's how come I think that the fractivist movement shows how we've revitalized, we've refocused, we've reinvigorated the American environmental movement to address these problems in a meaningful way, and we are now a seriously powerful political force for change. And that's how come it is so important to go to State of the State on the 13th, show the governor we ain't going away. We're not going to get bought off by some, you know, increases in the budget. We know what we want, and then we're going to hold them accountable. And I think if we keep doing this, it's ones and twos, as you noted. Some of the people who are listening to this are going to think, oh, my God, what a ranting lunatic. But some fraction of them are going to say, that sounds sensible to me. I've always wondered, how come we've been funding the environmental movement and these giant groups for decades and decades, and we don't seem to be getting very far? How come I haven't heard about them, you know, going to the wall and leading these battles? And that's because they're not.
Great. Thank you, Walter. I'm sorry to say that brings us to just about the end of our time today. So.